On another exciting edition of Animation Deliberation, we continue our coverage of Harley Quinn Season 3 with Episode 7, Another Sharkly Adventure. We will dive right into that after some ads we have no say over whatsoever. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back, Woo. Jay Scotty.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back. And welcome back to the listeners to Animation Deliberation, the podcast where we take action, animation, and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. As Andrew just introduced me, I'm J. Scotty St. Clair, and I am joined by...
And as J. Scotty introduced me, I am Andrew Rogers.
Right. If you couldn't tell, it's been a couple of weeks since I've been here, so I'm shaking off the rust a little bit and some of the dust, but it is really good to be back. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, no, we definitely missed you, and it wasn't quite the same, but Harley Quinn is Harley Quinn, so the show must go on week to week, but... Yeah, what did you get up to in these couple weeks that you were gone?
Yeah, so I will share with the listeners just kind of as a PSA. After 2.5 years of dodging COVID, I did finally contract COVID, and it's still out there. So, you know, be careful. If you're in a large crowded space, you know, maybe try to keep some social distancing in mind. If you have any symptoms whatsoever, I encourage you to keep wearing the mask and just, you know, kind of keep your head on a swivel, be safe. Obviously, it's up to us as individuals, but it's still a thing. So I just want to be fully transparent and have a note of caution there. But yeah, as difficult as it was to kind of have to, you know, sit back and not do anything for a little while, it did afford me the opportunity to watch some stuff, which is always a little bit of a nice reprieve. So on the Ooh. Animation side of things, I checked out Disenchantment on Netflix, which is from Matt Groening. I had finished up my rewatch of Futurama on Hulu in preparation for the new season that we're going to get next year. And I'd never watched Disenchantment, so I finally took the plunge there. I watched all 4 seasons and had a really good time with it. It's different from any of his other outings, and the fact that it feels like there is much more of an in-game in sight. And I don't know how close I am to that after finishing up season 4, but it's just a great parody of all things kind of fantasy and steampunk and that whole kind of Dungeons and Dragons role-playing kind of scenario. So if you haven't checked it out and you're a fan of those other properties like The Simpsons or Futurama, definitely recommend that.
Okay, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Have you watched it at all?
I've watched the first 2 seasons, I believe.
Okay.
And then cool. After that, Netflix just kind of got away from me in all capacities. It wasn't like I ended because I wasn't enjoying it. I was enjoying the crap out of it. It just, the next season came and I was not keeping up with the times at that point. So
yeah,
it was a lot of fun what I saw though. So totally recommend.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I totally understand that. There was a couple of years that I went without like watching Netflix at all. So now that I have it again, there's definitely a lot of catch up I'm doing. But I did spend a little bit of time with HBO Max as well, outside of Harley Quinn. There is an anime. I know Zuhair and Andrew are typically the anime aficionados, where I'm a little bit more of a casual, filthy casual, I'll say. but there's a series called Tokyo Revengers. Have you watched that one at all?
I have not had a chance to watch that yet, but I have heard good things. So please spout it off as much as you like.
Yeah. I'm probably about a quarter of the way into the season so far, but it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of a mashup of genres. It has some sci-fi elements there with some time travel, but then it's also kind of a coming of age story. It's kind of this disaffected 26-year-old guy who's not really happy with where his life's gone. And he kind of gets the opportunity to go back and re-experience his like middle school and early high school experiences, and just kind of reminds me of Akira in some ways, with like the biker gangs that kind of permeate the culture there in Japan. But it's a lot of fun, excellent animation, great action, a lot of drama, and the vocal performances are really on point. So I definitely recommend checking that one out, Tokyo Revengers.
That's super cool. Yeah, I mentioned last week I've been watching Assassination Classroom.
Okay. And yeah, yeah.
I am up to the, I believe it's the show finale. It's only two seasons long. Okay. And there's like two episodes that I have left, and it is just, it is an awesome show all the way around. Okay. Like the first season was very, okay, this is kind of a fun high school anime with very action heavy tropes, as you could guess from the name Assassination Classroom. And then the second season has just been one of those, okay, we're going to flip it on its head. It's a totally different genre. Like, almost My Hero in nature, the direction that it took in the second season, as for right. the like how intense they're going with things. So it's been a lot of fun. It's weirdly emotional for a show that like pretends that it's not trying to be emotional as well.
Okay.
So I have been enjoying the crap out of that, and probably will be able to say about the finale after tonight when I inevitably watch it.
Okay.
So yeah, that's been my anime, and then I've been gaming a little bit as well.
Nice.
I got Xbox Game Pass, and then my girlfriend and I sat down. She doesn't like video games, but one night she was like, hey, you want to play some games? I was like, yes, what can we do?
Let's,
you know, do all this. And we played a game called Superliminal, which is the most bizarre puzzle game I've ever played. It's like Portal meets, I don't even know what to say that it meets, because it's very self-aware, but very much like, gets in your head, because it's a play on supernatural and subliminal. That's why it's called Superliminal. So it was just a ton of fun. If you're looking for some way to kill a couple hours, because I think we beat it in like two nights of playing for like 2 or 3 hours just together on the couch, so it's not a super long game, but it was definitely something I was like, this is fun, and I think I'm gonna talk about it because the graphics were very homey. It felt like a couch game, so I was like, yeah, this is animation adjacent.
Yeah, I always appreciate how you're able to kind of loop in video games under the caveat of animation there. So I know Gamescom 2022 just happened this last weekend and week. So I know there was
a Gotham Knights still going on.
Okay, I didn't know for sure, but I know there was a Gotham Knights trailer that dropped. So I thought of you, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, Superliminal sounds super cool. I'm going to have to check that out, especially with the you. Providing the adage there that your girlfriend is more of a casual gamer, and she was able to just pick it up with you and enjoy it all the way through. I was going to ask, though, you mentioned Xbox Game Pass. Are you playing on Xbox, or are you playing on PC through Game Pass?
I am playing on Xbox because my lovely laptop that does all of our hardcore podcasting here can run any game pre-2016, and then at that point, it's just a hard cutoff where it can't do anything beyond that point. So, everything else is on Xbox.
Well, that's good to know, because I'm a fellow Xbox gamer. I'm taking a little bit of a break from gaming right now, but when I get back into it, I'll have to keep you in mind. We'll have to exchange gamer tags, because we are few and far between. I feel like everybody is a PlayStation owner, and I don't have extreme brand loyalty or whatever, but I just I've had Xbox since the original Xbox, so it's kind of like I don't want to lose my gamer score. I don't want to lose all the movies and TV
exactly
that I bought
it.
Through Xbox. Yeah.
Yes.
And then the last little thing I'll touch on that you brought up is I did hear you talk about Assassination Classroom last week, and I checked it out for the same reasons, kind of feeling a little bit of a hole after finishing My Hero Academia. And I can't remember why I fell off, but I assume you're watching the sub rather than the dub, right?
Correct. Yes, I'm watching the sub.
I think that might have been the factor there. I typically kind of lean towards dubs if they're available, but I think this is one instance where the dub just was not up to snuff. So maybe I'll have to go back and check out the sub. But then the other thing I have to ask you mentioned you finished the first season. Does the opening theme song ever change? Because like that was just one thing that I found incredibly cheesy, was the opening theme song with like the kids jumping in the classroom for whatever reason. It always
It does the second season. I can't remember if it also does halfway through or not.
Okay.
But this is one I'm going to call her out a little bit. My girlfriend hates intros and outros. So whenever we're watching anything together, we just skip through them entirely. Like,
interesting.
Okay. I have her watch the first one, or rather, I let her, or I have her let me watch the first one, because I always want to at least get some enjoyment out of it. Sure. And then after that, we're always skipping through it. So I can't remember when that change was, because it happens at some point, but it does change. And that's the one thing that I will say, and then we'll switch gears to Harley Quinn. I, you know, never want to claim the sub versus dub superiority or anything like that. But the main reason that I think sub is a lot of times better comes down to high school anime and different things like that.
Sure.
A lot of times when they try and give them the very childish voices in English, it just, it makes it seem too kiddie and goes to the whole reason so many adults don't like animated things. Whereas when it, there are some of the high schoolers in those anime, when you do it in Japanese, that is a full-grown 40-year-old man giving his gruffest possible voice. And you don't care because he's the bully. And like it just kind of fits in. So that is a little bit of the reason that it, I like the sub a little bit better when it comes to the younger shows. When it comes to things that are you know, older, I don't really mind. But like a lot of the other stuff, it it helps a little bit get rid of the nuance of, oh, right, these are middle school kids.
Sure. Totally valid. Totally valid. I know most people that are, you know, hardcore anime fans do prefer the sub over the dub. So duly noted.
And like I said, not even a thing that I'm trying to call anyone out. Yeah, it's just when you're watching some of the things where it's kids is where I think the gaps lay a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally valid. Totally valid. Well, we are about 10 minutes, 11 minutes into the episode, so we should pivot to Harley Quinn. That is the title of the episode here. But I will make mention, we did have some feedback, and we'll bring up some other things in the world of animation towards the end of the episode here. But let's go ahead and dive right into Harley Quinn. Again, this is season 3, episode 7, titled Another Sharkly Adventure. So I've got the episode description here, and then we can go into our reactions, thoughts, and all the little things we notice. So while Ivy recovers from the side effects of using the green, Harley volunteers to kidnap Bruce to find out where he is keeping Frank. She sneaks into a charity gala Bruce is hosting at Wayne Tower, but Batgirl tries to stop her despite genuinely wanting to be friends with Harley. After a short fight, they both get caught by the Mad Hatter, who wants to kill them, especially Batgirl for interfering with his plans to mind-control Gotham's citizens. Harley talks her way out of captivity but feels guilty for leaving Batgirl behind and eventually goes back to save her, killing Mad Hatter in the process. Meanwhile, King Shark returns home for his father's funeral, only to learn that his newly crowned brother, Kamea, plans to sell the Shark Kingdom to their archenemy, Ocean Master. After failing to change his mind, they get into a violent fight, ending with King Shark unintentionally killing his brother. Back at Catwoman's apartment, Ivy fully recovers and gains new plant-based powers, while Harley returns with the kidnapped Bruce. Okay, so with that out of the way, Andrew, what did you think about this latest installment of Harley Quinn?
It was weird. I didn't know quite where it was going at any given point. Mm-hmm. And then like this, the Batgirl and Harley interaction, I kind of forgot they were friends. So I was like, wait, why are they texting each other? What's going on here? I was just all sorts of confused going into this episode. And then throughout, you had some fun action, and I definitely, you know, got my enjoyment out of that. But it was just, it was a lot of back and forth, like I said.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't here last week to share my thoughts, but I did listen to a lot of what you and Zuhair brought up about episode 6, and that was very pretty much entirely focused on the Joker, with like I think Ivy and Harley maybe showing up for a scene. So when I saw the title, I thought maybe we'd be going in the same direction with just focusing on King Shark, but I'm kind of glad it didn't go in that direction. It's nice because a lot of these characters that we've kind of grown attached to, like Clayface, like King Shark, and it feels like King Shark, especially for this season, has kind of been relegated to a background role. So I was pretty happy for him to be able to go off and do his own kind of adventure, and to also get some traction and some progress with the story that Harley's focusing on in terms of knowing that Bruce was the one that kidnapped Frank. Other than that, they treated Batman like a total punching bag this episode, and I am totally okay with it. Like, that's one of the things I love about this show. It just, no one is safe from being treated absolutely irreverently and having the gas kind of taken out of their wings or their flight, what have you. And I thought there were some fun references too, so I had fun with it. And the animation actually surprisingly impressed me, especially the underwater stuff. Like, one of the other DC yes. shows we've tackled here with a lot of love is Young Justice. But in some ways, I even though the animation here is a little more simplistic, I did find myself being really impressed with not only the blood effects in the water when King Shark and his brother were having their fight, but also this is something I just recently learned about, and I know you probably saw this as well, Andrew, being a fan of Corridor Digital. Yes. Yeah, they recently did a video on caustics, the patterns of light that you'll see when things take place underwater. So I appreciated all the caustics that were taking place. They weren't super complex, but having those be an element definitely sold me on the underwater environment.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. You beat me to the punch. Their lighting, I think, was the part that really made that portion of the episode stand out so much more than the rest of the episode, because mm-hmm. you just had amazing water features going on in the background and this attention to detail of, oh, let's do lighting. Let's make it so that when they punch each other, the blood floats up. It was a lot of attention to detail that I didn't know that they needed, but I was really happy that they did decide to put all that in. So it was really good. And then the only other part of the animation that surprised me was later on more blood when the blood splattered the camera. That also was a moment of like, oh, okay, we're animating it this way. That was it was a touch that they've done before, but always surprises me a little bit when they do.
Okay. Was that during the King Shark fight, or is that when Harley killed Mad Hatter?
That was when Harley killed Mad Hatter, which also, okay. She killed Mad Hatter. We're just going to gloss over that she killed Mad Hatter. That girl wasn't going to like chastise her or do anything. It was just like, oh, he's dead now.
Well, he was a perv, so I guess they'll let it go. But what is her kill count up to at this point? She's killed some major players in the Gotham crime scene at this point.
Is it four? Because there's Penguin.
Yes.
Then she is technically responsible for Freeze's death.
Correct.
And then was it Madam Storybook? What was her name? It wasn't. What I just said was definitely wrong.
Queen of Fables? Queen of Fables.
Queen of Fables. Did she kill her or did she get away?
I
feel like that was the whole end the bloodline thing in the last season.
Yeah, I wish I could recall, but I can't recall.
So yeah, assuming those are the only major players she killed, her kill count's at least at four. And then there's, you know, plenty of goons and other things. And the guy she hit with the cancer, Ray, in the first season. Oh, so, yeah, you know, she's got a lot on her conscience at this point.
Yeah. With that in mind, it was kind of nice to get the reflection in the elevator. Speaking of her conscience, I feel like it's been a while since we've seen that visual representation of the Harleen Quinzel that still exists inside of her and has this like PhD in psychology and psychotherapy and actually can address some of these. I mean, the show is not, you know, doing a deep dive onto any of these issues, but just in the span of this episode, like clinginess was brought up, codependency, childhood trauma and abandonment issues. So it's nice that they respect the character enough to acknowledge that she has a working knowledge of these issues. And I like that elevator scene a lot.
Yeah, no, the elevator scene, it was interesting. And it goes back to majority of the characters that they have shown in these shows. They are a love letter. They have done their homework. They understand their background. They remember, oh, yeah, she is a psychologist. She would probably have some sort of, you know, mental issue with what is actually going on from an understanding. And there are so many interesting comics when it come down to it that I'm not going to get into when they start to go into her psychology background, that it just becomes super interesting.
Yeah. And it really does kind of feel like the episode, like sometimes we have A, B, and C storylines, but it really feels like there was just kind of the A and B storyline with Harley and King Shark, you know, giving it the fitting title of another Sharkly adventure there. Where I appreciated the animation and the action on the side of King Shark and just kind of getting to spend some time with him. And he's always been a little bit more of like a sentimental and not really, his intentions never seem that bad. He's just kind of a lighthearted, he's kind of a lover, not a fighter, but once you unleash that shark, he's pretty devastating. But I found myself like really appreciating a lot of the references that occurred with Harley's storyline and the Mad Hatter, which I have to bring up. The Mad Hatter was voiced by Griffin Newman, who also voiced Orko, which was a show that we covered, at least in part, on this show, Masters of the Universe Revelation. And then he was also in the live action, the second attempt at a live action adaptation of The Tick on Amazon Prime, which had a couple of seasons. He was Arthur in that show. So I thought he did an excellent job tapping into the kind of creepy and kooky, machinations of a guy like Mad Hatter, who he's kind of hit or miss for me in terms of Batman villains. He's kind of like just ripped from the pages of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. But there have been some cool adaptations that I appreciate. Arkham City, I think, had one of the better adaptations.
Yeah, and that was going to be my little asterisk on the comment I made earlier of most of the characters, they are a love letter to who they are in the comics. I feel like Hatter was just kind of there. And then we killed him. Like, they didn't really develop the interesting side of, okay, what's wrong with you? Why do you only care about this? Like, he could have called the girls Alice like he does in the comics. He could have done the rhyme scheme. Like, in comics, he just doesn't stop rhyming the whole time. And I wanted to see that and have Harley get annoyed and be like, can you just shut up for 5 seconds? Like,
okay.
And that's my only, from a comic fan background, my only nitpick of what Mad Hatter brought. I do agree. His voice performance was fantastic for making this trying not to be creepy but slightly off-putting character, you know, to life. But there just wasn't enough of the Lewis Carroll for me personally to be like, oh, I love the character. He did a good job. I'm never going to fault the voice actor for a writing decision such as that.
Certainly not. Yeah. Outside of the Mad Hatter, one of the references that I kind of like, I'm not 100% sure if this was a reference, but I kind of think it was there if you wanted it. When we first kind of got introduced to the storyline with the cow news boy hat, and Bruce is kind of sitting there wallowing in his self-pity and his depression, Batgirl offers to give him a hug. She's like, that always makes me feel better. Oh, we don't do that. And it's a really awkward moment. I wondered, like, this season in particular has had a ton of references to The Killing Joke, and there was that animated adaptation. I was wondering, are they playing at that, the most awkward part of that adaptation with their relationship there? Is that why they were just kind of moved away from it very quickly? I don't know. I might be, you know, extrapolating things that aren't there, but I kind of think it was there if you were looking for it and wanted it. But I don't think anybody wants it. But
we ignore that storyline. For the most part, it didn't happen. It's fine. Like, because the whole time you were saying there were references, I was like, what were the references this week? I'm usually pretty good at picking up on them, but now that you've said that, it's just staring me in the face. Like, yeah, that was almost 100% why we were going somewhere in that, you know, realm.
Sure. I guess a ton of references might be a little bit of a stretch. Now that I'm kind of like looking at my notes, I guess this is more of a cameo, but I did think it was worth mentioning that Ratcatcher made his debut. Again, not a love letter to the character, but it's good to see him.
An Aquaman level reference at this point.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we also had Shark Jesus. I mean, that is a cameo in and of itself, I suppose.
Yeah. And then thinking about Shark Jesus and that whole scene in the underwater chapel there, it was nice to see some background characters, but I wish they would have thrown them a line or two. Like, you had the little shrimp guy that was clearly based on Sebastian from The Little Mermaid in the past. I remember he was always a funny character, but he didn't really get a line this time around. And then they kept cutting to Nanaway's, his arranged wife, or his wife in the arranged marriage there. And she kind of like, her face lit up when she thought he was going to take the scepter and be king. But I kind of forgot who she was until I did some research, and that was Tabitha. So, I mean, there was an opportunity to throw her a line there too, but I understand why, you know, they kind of had to move the story at a brisk pace.
Yeah. And I mean, it just really needed to get to the point of, okay, this conflict, because when that scene first started, I was like, where are we going with this? The show always has a reason in mind. And then once we got to, okay, he doesn't want to be king, he's going to sell it off to the land developer that we just decided is going to be Ocean Master in this story because it makes sense that way. But Ocean Master was a very fun caricature of the you know, hardcore comic character that we're so used to.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed him, and I liked the fact that he didn't end up being like the big bad. He was just kind of a comedic foil there for a brother brotherly rivalry.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I will say his style in this show was pretty great. They had him rocking that full armored outfit, the quill hiding inside of his helmet that was like the specialized metal. He was really rocking out fully. And then to have the joke of him have male pattern baldness underneath the helmet when you take it off was just that extra level of like, man's got style, but that doesn't mean he's not trying to compensate for something.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And he's not getting that helmet back anytime soon. He doesn't want it back. So he's going to have to, you know, live with that.
I was going to say, I'm kind of glad that they use the helmet, though, because I thought they were foreshadowing that he was going to eat his brother when he mentioned that he ate all of his other siblings prior.
Right. Yeah.
I was like, oh, is this just going to end with Nanue taking a big chomp out of him? Like,
right
on the head. I was a little happy that we didn't go that route, but I thought that was the foreshadowing they were stretching for as they gave us the not so subtle reminder of what happened to his siblings in the past.
Yeah, what did he say? You know, I have hypoglycemia, I black out. It's like all 13 times.
Look, it happens. You get hungry, you get a little hangry. Next thing you know, it's a little shark tartare. It's fine.
Yeah, get that man get that shark a Snickers, rather. sorry.
Now I want like a fake Snickers commercial with King Shark in it. Like, yes. You're not you when you're hungry.
yes, that'd be great. That'd be great. Another standout line for me. It was a little bit of lowbrow humor, but that's to be expected with this show, I think, at this point. But the whole talking about how Kamea was the one who stayed behind and took care of their dad, especially the diaper stuff. And when they finally come back to that, it's like, if you have to wear a diaper down here because we shit in the water, you know things are messed up then. And I was like, I don't even want to think about what that entails.
That shark was ready to become a pelt as he did. It was his time to go if he had to have a diaper on.
Another line that kind of stood out to me that was going back to the Mad Hatter scene is right before Harley abandons Batgirl before she comes back. He's talking about how they seem like they would be friends, and she's like, no, I'm nothing like her. I'm like you in the broadest of senses. <It's>
like, pause.
Yeah.
Yeah, they weren't really like laugh out loud lines, but there were a lot of good, clever lines just sprinkled in there. Like there was the point when they were talking about kidnapping Bruce Wayne and she was like, what's he going to do? He's not Superman. Like,
yes.
Yeah, of course he's not Superman. He's, you know, Batman. And I'm really curious how that is going to resolve itself when Bruce wakes up and has to fight back without seeming like Batman. That's probably going to play out in some interesting capacity, especially being at Selina's house while Selina knows that he's Batman. But
right.
Yeah, there was that line. And then there was another line where Harley was going through what she had in her bag. She was like, oh yeah, I got duct tape. I got sanitizer. I got wire cutters. I got a people cutter. I was like, is that a knife?
Oh,
did
nice.
She just have a knife in her bag and she just called it a people cutter?
Nice. I didn't catch that one. That's good.
No, that was just one of those moments. But yeah, like I said, they were sprinkled really well in there, but they weren't laugh out loud enough to like actually get me going. But I took note of, wow, they're trying their hardest to get this out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's pretty much what I have for the most part as far as the episode goes. But I did want to pick your brain a little bit about where we're going from here, because this was episode 7. We know we've got 10 episodes this season, so we're kind of getting close to that end game there. Now with Ivy, she was kind of relegated to an incapacitated role for most of the episode, and I found myself wondering, like, is she actually going back into the green? Because it looked like she was, with her eyes glowing green like they do, but we saw the opposite of what was happening in the beginning of the episode, where the plants were kind of withering and dying. now the plants are kind of going full on out of control to where Catwoman's whipping at them with her whip. She's trying to vacuum around them. And by the end of the episode, Ivy seems like she's fully recuperated, but she might be even more powerful than ever. So when you brought up, you know, Bruce kind of having to fight his way out, that was definitely something I considered there. He might have to be rescued by the Bat family, and this might put Batgirl and Harley directly against each other again after, you know, having made a little bit more of a friendship here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we brought Nightwing and Batgirl into this season for a reason, and mm-hmm. having them have to rescue, and we can't forget about the Macaroni as well, having of all course. Of them have to come and rescue Bruce would make sense. I could also see, you know, some weird, we're layering in, okay, do they get back together? Is this a weird Bat and the Cat situation where Selina has to save him instead of choosing?
Oh, nice. Okay.
There was also like almost a little bit of imagery of her dress that the flowers were making, almost felt like a wedding dress.
Agreed.
So I don't know if we're going into her and Harley are going to have second marriage, or she's going to marry to the green and be gone from Harley. I feel like there may be some conflict coming as for, you know, Ivy going back into the green or becoming too powerful or something along those lines. Or for all we know, Frank could just be taking over from the shadows. Like, he's still out there being all powerful. So it's left enough questions that I don't really know what the answer is. And, you know, we love speculation that is not necessarily correct, because
of course
that means we're in a good place of, okay, what's next? What else can we see? And this was the first episode that it left me wanting more, because I felt like not enough happened. So I was just like, oh, that's wait, fair. We're dropping Bruce on the floor. Where's the next thing? I need to know what happens to Bruce, because, you know, Bruce doesn't drink. Why was he drunk? Like, what happens now that he wakes up and he's drunk in someone else's house? This is going to be interesting. How do we play this?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I like what you brought up about Catwoman. It'll be interesting to see if that pushes the envelope on their relationship or lack of one there. But there's still a lot of other cards still left on the table, like the fact that Joker is the mayor. We saw that in the last episode. Batman hasn't really had an opportunity to react to that. I'm surprised they didn't touch on that at all. I'd be sorely disappointed if Bane does not at least factor in at least a little bit in these last few episodes. He still has not gotten that spaghetti or that pasta maker back.
That pasta maker.
Plus, he's got his therapy going on. What if Harley becomes his therapist? I don't see it happening, but just
I don't either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got one already.
And we were negative a couple podcasts ago, and I'm trying to be very positive, but this is going to be a little negative. It feels like they have a through line that they want to get to of Harley wants to terraform. She has powered up Frank, and okay, something bad is going to happen here at the end of the season. But they put in a lot of interesting threads that I don't feel like they're going to pull on. Like the whole Clayface taking over Billy Bob Thornton in the movie has never gone any further than that one episode. Like you said, Bane and the pasta maker was set up to be such a funny recurring joke that has then been left behind, and we haven't seen Bane. That Joker episode might be a one-off. What happens to Gordon now that, you know, he can't be a cop anymore? Yep. It's just they're doing these little side bits that I feel like in previous seasons, all of their side bits were coming to a head. Like, I would have expected to see the Mad Hatter's big weird hats in like the first four episodes and be like, why are people in the background wearing big hats? What is going on? And then have this episode be, oh, it was Mad Hatter the whole time. I feel like they were almost rushed this season. I don't know if that's actually the case, but they're doing a really good job with that main through line. I think that through line is great. It's just these side stories I want more of. They're not doing a bad job with these side stories, but like, give me all of it.
No, I think you bring up some valid criticisms, and I don't think you're being too negative at all. And I mean, that's a whole part of the show. As much as we love to celebrate these shows, it is a deliberation. We have to bring up, you know, some of the things that might not resonate with us as well. And I do agree with you. I hope that a lot of these threads don't just get dropped, or maybe they're saving them for a fourth season. But I have to imagine that one of the reasons we're kind of feeling that rush is because this season's only 10 episodes, whereas I think the previous two seasons were at least 12 episodes each. I want to say.
I forgot about that. Let's take a look here. Yeah, the first one was 13. The second one was 13 as well. Okay. So if we are confirmed as actually only getting 10, that would make a little sense that they had to, you know, leave some stuff on the cutting room floor.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And maybe we'll get an extra 3 episodes that we just don't know about yet. That'd be a nice pleasant surprise.
They could pull a Sandman on us. I mean, I would like some pleasant surprises out of Warner Brothers, because all of the news that I've been reading lately has not been pleasant. So let's give us something. Let's give us something nice here, folks.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I'm still having a ton of fun with the series. It's a nice little step away from the DC universe that, as much as I love, sometimes can take itself a little too seriously. You know, Joker said it back in The Dark Knight, why so serious? It doesn't always have to be so dark and serious. But yeah, I think that's everything I've got to say about this episode. Did you have anything else you want to highlight about episode 7 here, another Sharkly adventure?
No, like I said, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen next week.
Awesome, awesome. Well, while we're winding down here, as I mentioned before we did our deep dive into the Harley Quinn coverage here, we had a piece of feedback. Did you want to bring that up for us, Andrew?
Yes, I did. Like we said, it's not Harley Quinn related, but it is She-Hulk related. So Marvel has, you know, given us another gift, as it were. And this is a feedback email from Andre Sparks, who wanted to email us and just said, "Hey guys, just wanted to say, between Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk, they're killing it with their animation / art during their live action shows." And he sent us a awesome picture that I'm going to put up on our Instagram story. I'll make sure that it's up when this podcast goes live. And it's just a culmination of all of the art from the She-Hulk credits episode 1. Mm-hmm. And I really can't agree more. I want to say The Mandalorian started this idea on the Disney Plus shows when they had the concept art in the credits, which I absolutely adored. And since then, they've just had so much fun with it. But these She-Hulk ones, I love, because I kind of forgot that courtroom art was still a thing. Like, I know it used to be a thing back when cameras weren't allowed in the courtroom, but then they had that sprinkle Easter egg in that first episode where we saw someone on a Cintiq doing the courtroom art right at the end. So then to have the credits in that courtroom style, which is honestly a just beautiful style to do anything in, because they're capturing such raw moments in the courtroom.
Sure.
And then, you know, to have it as a Marvel show, I couldn't agree more. They're doing just this love letter to the artists that are definitely working very hard behind the scenes.
Oh, certainly, certainly. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up The Mandalorian, because that's immediately where my mind went as well. It's definitely the most similar in terms of all these Marvel shows that we've gotten. And I've enjoyed them all. But I agree in terms of like the artwork here. I've not skipped the ending credits once for She-Hulk so far. And I believe he brought up Ms. Marvel as well. And I really like the artwork for Ms. Marvel as well, especially in that first episode. And I haven't really had a chance to talk about Ms. Marvel too much, but I will say it's my favorite, if not my second favorite, of the Disney Plus series so far. And if I had any criticism whatsoever, I kind of wish they would have continued that through line of her imagination and her YouTube channel and her envisioning her heroes kind of like dancing along the landscapes and whatnot. Like, I love that so much in the first season. It would have been cool if that persisted through the show a little bit longer, and maybe there's an opportunity to incorporate it in The Marvels when she shows up in that.
So I have some very specific thoughts on this.
Okay.
And is a feedback email that I'm planning to write to the MCU cast at some point when they're done with She-Hulk and they're doing roundups.
Sure.
And it comes down to, and we're going to talk Marvel here, ladies and gentlemen, so buckle up. I think it comes down to the direction of these shows. And when I say direction, I mean who is in the director's chair.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think that any of these Marvel directors are doing bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the fact that they're bringing in multiple directors to direct what is essentially a 6-episode movie leaves us with those weird moments of, why did this episode completely change in tone compared to the others? Like, it has happened just about in all of the shows. At some point, there's an episode that doesn't quite feel like it fits. And Ms. Marvel is the easiest one to point at. Of the first and the last episode are both directed by the same person. Because I wasn't prepared for this rant, I don't have that director in front of me, so I apologize.
That's okay. No worries.
But this is something I just want to hear, you know, the MCU cast thoughts on of, do we think they should be locking down one director for a 6-episode contract? Because Ms. Marvel, I think, would have been amazing to have that 1 in 6 episode energy through the whole thing, where it's her imagination and the planning and the bouncing around, because those two episodes are hands down my favorite. And I think a lot of people's favorite of that show.
Yeah.
So yeah. I just wonder, should they be doing something a little different? Because I'm almost worried about that with She-Hulk of, I enjoyed the heck out of this first episode, but I have yet to see the second episode. It comes out today, if anyone was wondering, for when we're recording, it is that Thursday. So I haven't had a chance. And I'm curious, is the tone going to change again? And am I going to feel this weird gap in my heart as I watch the second episode? And I don't want to feel that, but I just wonder, when it comes to these live action things, a movie always feels the same. What happens with these shows? And, you know, I think that's part of why it all feels differently. So, yeah, that's my big, you know, conspiracy theory, what I think should change going forward in Marvel. Okay. And I'm curious to know your thoughts on this as well.
No, I think it's an excellent point to bring up. And I, to my knowledge, I know for a fact that Matt Shakman directed every episode of WandaVision, and I think it shows. That's one of the best series that we've gotten so far. When I said Ms. Marvel's either my first or second favorite, it's going back and forth between WandaVision. I think WandaVision probably edges it out overall. But then the other series, I think, was Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And that one, while it was all 6 episodes were directed by the same person, I think the change up in the shooting schedule and some of the restrictions and the story changes that had to take place as a reaction to the pandemic, I think that's what affected that show more so than the direction per se. So I think it's a great point you bring up. And I, for one, do think they should be locking in a single director to see these shows through. I think it would result in more cohesion and just a better pacing, because, like, I don't get me wrong, I've gotten a fair amount of enjoyment out of every single one of these series. I think the series are in some cases kind of exceeding what some of the movies are doing. I tend not to talk about things that I don't like that much, but I get some level of enjoyment out of every single Marvel movie. But I guess I'll just come out and say it, because I haven't really had an opportunity to talk about it. Thor: Love and Thunder wasn't my favorite. I think Christian Bale was the best part of that movie. But outside of that, I don't think it's one that I'm going to go revisit a bunch. But yeah, all that to say, I think that's where Marvel, I don't want to say they're losing their way a little bit, but they've got so many balls in the air right now. They need to lock down these directors and kind of have a single person see it through, much like Kevin Feige did for the MCU for such a long time. So I appreciate you bringing it up. It's a great point. We're kind of on a tangent here that doesn't relate to animation per se, but all these movies special effects, and there are artists working on them on every single frame that you see. So
yeah, no, it's all good conversation, because, you know, we talk about direction and writing plenty on this show as well. You know, animation is not just what's on the screen, but there's so many other layers to animation that we get to talk about. So I love doing it all.
Yeah. Thank you, Andre, for writing in and affording us an opportunity to talk about something else a little bit there. The last thing I want to bring up is that Dragon Ball Super made some waves and made some history this weekend. It took the number one spot at the box office with a whopping $20.1 million debut, beating out the Idris Elba-led vehicle Beast. So it's been one of those things we've seen more and more, that anime films have a strong foothold here in the United States and as all across the world. So it's I love Dragon Ball. I love Dragon Ball Z. I've seen both of those sagas in their entirety at least a few times through, but for whatever reason, I have not made it past that point. So I haven't watched Dragon Ball Super Superhero yet, but with numbers like these, I might just have to check it out.
Yeah, Zuhair would be remiss if we didn't talk about this, because I know he saw it Thursday opening night. He was super excited. Okay. Cool. And I believe he's positive on it. He hasn't talked to me much outside of he is trying to work on getting a podcast guest of some kind that has seen it at this point.
Okay.
Because he does want to talk about it. But unfortunately, I've never seen an ounce of Dragon Ball, and my schedule has been busy as could be this week, or I was going to at least try and see it so that I could say, hey, the art's good, and give a thumbs up while he went on the tangent. But Hopefully we'll get something locked down with some schedules soon enough, as you can tell by the fact he hasn't talked at all. Zuhair's not here this week because he's busy, so hopefully he can get something worked out with the schedule at some point so we can hopefully talk more about Dragon Ball with you guys. But the interesting statistic that I posted up on our Instagram, I don't know if you saw that, Jay Scotty, that this is the first movie, this is the first animated Japanese movie to take the number one spot at the box office since Pokemon the first movie in 1998.
Wow.
That's legendary to be up in terms with Pokemon the first movie, because that was a big deal. Like, everyone knew Pokemon around the world, and then they made a movie. So, like, it makes sense that that took the number one spot. So for Dragon Ball to kind of come out of left field just in terms of current relevance, because it's not one of those things that's been talked about at length, like Demon Slayer, My Hero, it's just an oldie but goodie. For them to come out and do this, applause to them. I am excited to hopefully get the chance to see it at some point if it is this good. So,
yeah, definitely. All right. Well, this was a fun one, a pretty full rounded episode, I feel like.
Yes.
So I encourage all of you listeners, don't be shy. Send us some feedback. Send us some love. We haven't gotten a review in a while, so if you want to leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to us, and send us in a written review, send us in some feedback. You can do that in the form of a voicemail as well. Best place to do all those things is animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com. And Andrew, do you want to let them know about anything else you have going on or the social media stuff?
I will say also, in terms of what we have going on, we haven't really promoted it because we didn't know when it was going to hit the feed. But yesterday we had an I Am Groot podcast go up. That was Zuhair and myself. We recorded that right after the Harley Quinn episode of last week. But the schedules, like I said, have just been crazy. So that episode is up. If you haven't given it a listen, go do that. We had a ton of fun. And it's not just an I Am Groot podcast. If you liked what we talked about with Marvel in this podcast, we probably take about half of our time talking about VFX, VFX artists, and, you know, what it actually looks like on the whole scale of things. Cool. So it's definitely a informational and super fun podcast. If you haven't watched the I Am Groot shorts, go do that. They're a ton of fun. The only reason that podcast happened is because I enjoyed the crap out of them. Zuhair already had his chance to talk about it on the MCU cast. I was like, no, I want my turn. So we're going to do this again. So ton of fun. Go give that a listen. And then, as always, follow us on all of our social medias, Animation Delib 1 on Twitter and Animation Deliberation Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
Right on. Good stuff. For myself, since I was not here for a couple of weeks, the other podcast I was working on had to take a little bit of a hiatus as well. But Karen Hufstetler and I plan on resuming our coverage of What We Do in the Shadows season 4. No spoilers, but the most recent episode to come out for that is one of my favorites in a really long time. And all I'm going to say is I called it. If you know what it, if you know, you know. That's going to do it from me this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. That's TOONINLOL, period.
And follow us on Wayne-stagram. Muscle, muscle.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/svchat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.